Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Groomer Talk Radio. Today for the timeline marker is Sunday, March 20th in the year 2016. We have with us today Mary Aquindo. Some of you already know Mary. She's been on the show several times before. And she's also one of our popular independent GroomWise bloggers. She has pet first aid care. If you're just not listening to this show, she has a wealth of knowledge that's been posted. Well, it's been a few years now at that blog, so come on over to petgroomer.com, look for the blogs, part of Groomer Talk, and there's a wealth of information there besides what we're going to talk about today with Mary. A little background on Mary. She is a groomer and stylist. She has Positively Mobile Pet Grooming in Danbury, Connecticut, and she is one of only 13 certified master pet tech instructors worldwide. She leads pet educational seminars, takes a holistic approach to handling animals. Her titles include both Reiki Master and Certified Crystal Therapist. She is a certified master cat groomer and certifier. Mary is the proud member of the New England Pet Grooming Professionals Organization and a certified canine specialist with PJAC. She also has and founded the Positive Educational Training, and she's been nominated for the coveted Cardinal Crystal Mobile Groomer of the Year back in 2011. She also works with the Groomers Emergency Assistance Fund and continues her passion to bring us educational opportunities such as coming along on this show today. And we're going to talk about disaster and emergency planning for you. I'm sure she'll have a wealth of information on what to do to make you better prepared to handle should that happen. So let me bring Mary online. Hello, Mary.
Hi, Stephen. How's it going?
I'm doing good. It's always good to hear from you.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to be here.
Oh, thanks. Well, tell us just a little bit. Before we get into all this topic, what have you been up to the last few months?
Well, I've got two new projects coming down the line. The first one is I've written a book with Daryl Connor, Holistic Pet Grooming, and we're hoping to debut that book at the Tacoma Pet Show in April. So they're working hard on getting it ready for the show. But so hopefully that's number one. Daryl and I really poured our heart and soul into writing that book. And the second thing is I've started another blog, Spirit Dog Blog. It's about my little blind white husky, which all the Facebook pages are up. The website is up, but there's no blogs on it just yet. Probably like around May or so I should have that, up and running. So those are my two latest.
Well, I know especially putting out a book, there's never enough hours with a project like books. I'm telling you, so that's great to hear. It's always a major commitment to write a book of any kind. So that sounds great. I'm looking forward to hearing more about it. And hopefully even at the message board, we can give some reviews of it and all be great. So you keep us informed.
I absolutely will. Don't worry about that.
All right.
It'll probably be the subject of an upcoming blog.
Okay, great. And, you know, it'd be interesting to hear, because I think you remember back, oh gosh, you know, the message board has been around like 18 years now. It's like shocking to me that many years. But, you know, there was one time where even to bring up the word holistic and grooming together was controversial, and that really has seemed to even out today. So I'm, and now we were going to have a book even on it. It's pretty amazing to.
I was on the forums when you mentioned the word holistic, and people just had a meltdown. they truly did. But it's nice to see that it's gained a real foothold, and I don't think people truly they think when they hear the word holistic that like there's all this woo woo stuff behind it, and it's a really simple concept. And I think a lot of groomers would be surprised to learn that they probably are already a holistic groomer, and it's just incorporating that the needs and the wants and the cares of the dog or the cat, the client, and the groomer. I mean, and putting all of that in harmony. And that's really what holistic grooming is all about.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. We'll have to discuss this more, and maybe in a separate time by itself, too. That would be great. Because I think you're right. People don't realize how holistic they probably already are today. Groomers tend to really, more than some trades. I mean, a plumber only can talk about plumbers so much, but with our pets, a lot of groomers, you know, they'll study the dog breeds, they'll study the health of dogs, they'll study the training of dogs, and it becomes a part of 24 hours a day, you know, of your
mm-hmm.
life compared to some kind of trades. Well, that's what I go to do, but when I come home, I'm not a plumber anymore, I'm just this guy. But we're dog people, we're into dogs and their health care, everything 24 hours a day, so I think you're right. That's a great viewpoint there. Now, let's get into pet emergency and disaster planning. Now,
right.
I want to ask you a question first about this, because what do you say to people who won't take some of this advice? Some are going to do it, but some people, oh, nothing's going to happen to me.
Yeah. I hear that all the time.
Others. I mean, it's sort of impossible, isn't it? So how do you deal with it?
Well, you know what? I always, where I live here in Danbury, there was a bank that for 16 of the 20 years that I lived here, once a year, somebody drove their car into the lobby of this bank. It was almost like you could lay odds on it. I mean, yeah, we have a lot of snowbirds. I don't know what it is with that particular bank. But about 4 years ago, I guess they got tired of it, and they put up a concrete barrier in front of the window. So it's this stuff happens, you know. If you're near an interstate, you know, a tractor trailer rolling over can force an evacuation of a radius around where the accident includes, and that includes the streets and the homes. So it doesn't even have to be your business. It could be the business next door to you. You know, you don't know what goes on in somebody else's business. There could be a fire, and that fire could impact your business.
Sure.
So it happens, you know. I mean, in the case of the bank, it was almost, you know, like clockwork. But you know what? A car driving into the lobby of a bank not only affects the bank, it affects the structural integrity of the entire building. The entire building would have to be evacuated until the city came over and inspected it and made sure it was safe for everybody else to come in.
Yes, you know that last week, literally, on our message board daily, we try to search the news on the Internet, and three times in 1 week, last week, a car went through plate glass of two groomers, and
mm-hmm.
at least half the car was inside the building. Fortunately, there was no groomers working right at, you know, for the natural light right but there. But in the third one, the truck was going so fast that it went through the wall of the business next door. The entire truck went through a wall, not easier to get through a plate glass window, but literally fast. But what was next door was the groomer. So three times in 1 week, that's the odds are getting much, much stronger that some preparations are in order.
And you know what? You have the care. It's not like you're a dress shop, okay? You might have a couple clients in there, you know, people shopping for dresses. When you're a groomer, you have somebody's pride and joy, love of their life in your facility.
You know.
So you have to be prepared. I mean, I've been doing a lot of local pet first aid classes. I've been in a lot of shops lately. And honestly, it kind of almost warms my heart to see the number of shops that are prepared to evacuate the pets in their care. They have the hard shell carriers, which are so much better than the wire crates. I mean, the wire crates can fold up. They don't take up much room, but then you got to put them together, so that can eat a little time. But they have the hard shell carriers in all different sizes, all stacked up, and if they have to, it's just put a pet in each one of these carriers and get them into the vehicle and get out of here.
Great. Well, okay, this is a great topic. And by the way, we have had some extra questions come in from the message board, so I'm going to be asking you those. First off, to those of you that are on the telephone listening, if you have a question for Mary, you'll press 1 on your telephone keypad, and that will send a flag to me that you have a question, and I'll get to you as I can. Just hold on and just wait, and we'll get to you. So, I think we've established that it's important to be prepared. Let's start with some of the ideas, your best ideas, you think, for like these crashes, for example, crash guards or whatever. Go ahead, Mary.
Well, I do recommend if you're a standalone shop of having a generator. Right? It doesn't have to be a very expensive one, just something that can keep things running. Just a simple event that you lose power, which, you know, maybe a car hits the telephone pole outside your shop, and now you have no power in there. And, you know, in the summertime, that means no AC. In the wintertime, that means no heat. The only problem with generators is that, A, they should be professionally installed. You should have a dedicated outlet for it. And there's a right and a wrong way to hook it up. And the other thing with generators is that if you don't use them, you still need to run them like once a month. Put some, you know, a little more gas in it, have it run for about a half hour. Because if you don't do that, it actually damages the engine of the generator so that when you need it, it may not work.
Great. Good idea. We actually, you know, helped a local groomer who works out of her property. She went with the propane generator, and it comes on automatically, and it runs that, like you're saying, it automatically every 2 weeks turns itself on for 10 minutes. So
yes.
You know better that the generator's ready to go. All right.
And
what about things like tornadoes?
Well, you should know what your area, what the dangers are to your area. And if you don't know what natural disasters, go to your local emergency management office. Every municipality has one. It may not be every town. It might be a county office, depending on how small the area is. But every municipality has an emergency management office that is dedicated to that community. And they will tell you what could befall you naturally. All right? And it's not just like things like tornadoes. Tornadoes don't have a lot of warning, to be honest. But there are dams. There's like almost thousands and thousands of dams in the United States. And I think a fully one-third of them are in really bad shape. And that could also affect your business. But for things like tornadoes and stuff like that, you need to get away from the windows. You need to be like in the centermost area, preferably someplace that doesn't have doors or windows. But, you know, whatever is lowest and in the center-est is best. You know, everyone's business is going to be different. You know, you may not have that kind of luxury to be able to have, like, this dedicated room to like, take all the pets to.
Right, right. You know, just bouncing back a little bit to the generator, I think we've seen a lot more, even on the message board, of people starting to adopt that. For one thing, just even a regular power outage, with that actually even not being an emergency or disaster, there are power outages. And what's worse is to have a fully wet dog and no power.
Yes.
And it's hopeless. That's one everyone needs to pick up on, no matter what.
Yeah, and
fine, like you say,
you can get a generator
from.
I mean, Home Depot has them on. You can get one. You can get a cheap one for like $300.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe even cheaper than that. If you just need something just to keep the lights on, or just run an AC, or run some dryers, or run some heat, whatever. You don't need to have this huge monster in your business, but it should be considered equipment. Just like you have tables and you have dryers, it should be equipment for a groomer. And one other thing too is all of my clients and my client information cards, they sign a waiver for me, and several waivers. In fact, one of the waivers is in the event of a natural disaster or, you know, unplanned emergency, they're not home, I'm taking guardianship of their pets, and if I have to leave, I'm not leaving without their pets. So they give me permission to assume guardianship and relieve me of any responsibilities or liabilities because of that decision. So every groomer should have waivers for this, that the decisions that they make, they're not going to be held liable for it when they're making it in the best interest of the pet.
Okay, now you bring up waivers, and I know I'm going to get a question about this asked of me, whether it's a message board or whatever. They're going to say, Mary, where do I get a waiver?
I will send you over, you know, or maybe I'll do a blog on my waivers.
That'd be a good idea, easy to refer to, because I know that will come up, yes.
Right. You know, I'll schedule a blog. I'll do something on, and I'll just include a copy of my waivers.
Okay. I'll let everyone know who's listening how to get, it's very easy how to get to the blog over at groomwise.com. So weather tends to still be one of the prime creators of these emergency and disaster planning, so we have. But what about earthquakes?
That's still nature. And I think the major areas that are going to be a major problem with earthquakes, I mean, you kind of know that's where you live. And I've been, here in New York and in Connecticut, we don't get earthquakes, but every once in a while we get an earthquake. And would probably be something laughable in California, but will totally freak us out here. And I was driving up a rather steep driveway, and I couldn't drive up the driveway. It was like I was sliding down the driveway. And it didn't last very long, and I thought, well, there's something wrong with my tires. And, you know, when was the last time I checked my tires? And my tires were fine. It was actually an earthquake, and the reason I couldn't drive up the driveway was because the earth was moving underneath my vehicle. So even if you're not in an area that something like that could happen, you still should be at least in the back of your mind that this could happen. Now, I'm sure that earthquake was, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 on the Richter scale. Enough to shake the ground, but not enough to, like, damage any buildings. I think a couple lawn chairs got knocked over. That was about the extent of it. People were, like, racing out of buildings and stuff like that, which is not what you should be doing during an earthquake. But you should always be prepared for stuff, even if it's not normal to your area, because if that would have been a far more serious earthquake, people running out of buildings, a lot of people could have been killed doing that, rather than, you know, staying put where you are, you know, and under a load-bearing wall, and away from, like, you know, things that could fall on top of you. You know, that's kind of like standard for earthquakes, which might be very common knowledge in California, but, you know, no one here knew what to do during an earthquake.
That's right. I live on the West Coast all my life and been through a lot of quakes, and somehow I even seem to travel and be at some of the larger quakes, and that's interesting. But I was in the 1989 quake in San Francisco, and I was 41 stories high at that time. So I was in a skyscraper on wheels, so it rocked around for even a half hour after the quake. but I can tell people that was the things that, because a lot of groomers, hundreds of groomers lost their power all at once on that day. And that's the key thing that's going to happen is that, are you ready to have no power? And are you ready to evacuate those pets out of the building? Because if the building ceiling's falling down, you know, the suspended ceilings, they'll tend to fall. And you're going to have to get out of that building. And then the fires, another reason you're going to have to get out of the building, and the leaks and things like that. So what
exactly.
about evacuation? Tell us about evacuating.
That should be practiced. You, whether you're, you know, all by yourself, or you have employees, being able to practice that, have a day where you have like a training day, and you practice, even if it's with your own pets, loading your pets from the crates, from the cages in the shop into a crate, into the car, and practice that so that in the event that you do have to do it, it's more ingrained in you. Because part of the problem during any emergency situation, your body starts to dump like adrenaline, and that's the whole fight, flight, or freeze syndrome. So you're not thinking, you're reacting. And it's the reason why so many like EMS and fire departments and police departments and rescue departments, why they practice so much. You know, they practice so that it becomes second nature, so that in the event of a disaster, it's that knowledge that's just sort of been ingrained in them starts to take over, so they get past that whole adrenaline rendering their brains ineffective until they can, you know, start dissipating some of that adrenaline.
Yes. What about
And it should be in employee manuals as well.
Right. Seen anything for like portable fencing that maybe you could create this covered area outside the building that all the dogs could be in that area, containing them until you can have the time to get leashes and crates for everyone?
That's actually a really good idea. I should look into that. I'm sure there's going to be some sort of portable. In fact, you know what? I saw something on Facebook, but it had to do with RVs, sort of like fencing to put up for privacy on RVs.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to look up to that. I'm mobile, so what I need to do is just wherever I'm at, just take the animals out of the house into my van and go. So that's kind of simple there. I'm not dealing with dozens of different animals at one time. I think my largest household is about 3 pets, and then if you add in a couple of hamsters, it's, you know, not much.
Mm-hmm. You know, Mary, one other thing I experience, I like to tell people about being in a quake, is brick buildings. Being in this high rise, of course, all solid glass windows, I had a 360-degree view of the entire event from the Bay Bridge falling in pieces, whatever. But the one thing that I was the most surprised when I got down to ground level was brick walls. During the buckling, individual it would look like pockmarks afterward, but individual bricks would shoot literally across the street like an all-star pitcher was.
Wow. Had
pitched it. It was the weirdest thing to see these pockmarked walls. And where's the brick? They're across the street. So be very careful, brick walls. And that was most of the buildings that had to be destroyed afterward, condemned, were the brick. Because, again, that's another, if I'm in a brick wall building, I want to know my evacuation plan. Because after certain disasters, they can collapse very easily. And I bet in San Francisco, and I know in that whole region of California, you have to, very expensive, but landlords have to go in and reinforce these buildings that are made out of brick. But I bet there's large parts of the U.S. where they don't have those kind of codes, so be very wary of brick walls and shooting bricks. It would just, it'd kill somebody. These things were like going 60 miles an hour shot out from walls. So,
wow.
Anyway, yeah, that was something to learn. So what are some of the other emergencies that just come up without being a disaster? Maybe it's just in my building, you know?
It could be the building next door to you has a fire, all right? It could be somebody has a propane tank, and the propane tank either leaks, there's a gas. The gas leaks are probably the biggest ones. In this area here, there's a lot of propane. A lot of businesses have propane, so propane leaks. You know, when I first moved here, my next-door neighbor had this huge propane tank for his pool, and it was just sitting on this, you know, piece of wood, that's it, a pallet. And it was, the pallet was kind of leaning. And that was, you know, and I took one look at that, and I'm like, oh, that's not good, you know? Not everyone checks their propane all the time, or especially if it's not always in use, that it's used periodically, like my neighbor next door. I mean, they only used the propane tank during the summertime. So it had been probably early, we had moved in the wintertime. So, you know, it had not been used in a while. So, and the propane company that was filling it hadn't been out there in a while to like kind of check on it. So gas leaks would probably be the biggest thing. And then there are accidents that happen right outside your building. You know, two cars crash into each other on the highways. There's the tanker trailer that overspins. There are police chases that happen. You know, not so much. Well, I take that back. Depending on and some of the towns here in Connecticut have like a lot of high speed police chases that go through it. You know, and that could be problematic. And there's something else that probably people don't even think about too, is that a disaster doesn't have to be a natural disaster. It doesn't have to be some car crashing in front of your thing. It could be somebody hacking into your website. I mean, how many groomers have client information or do booking online or have financial information online, and a hacker could come in and grab that information?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's not just that. It's your information. It's your client information. How safe and secure is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, there are ways to put in. People want to download and hack. We can do some preventative things, making further levels of passwording when someone's trying to download and whatever, all the info. That's an interesting one to consider, all the things that could be done for that. Go ahead.
In this month's Groomer to Groomer, I have an article on website security.
Uh-huh, good. Okay. And if everybody wants, let me insert. If you want to follow, some people who listen to the show don't know about Groomer to Groomer. There, you can go to the website address just like that, groomer.com, and you can download the present and past issues. So if anyone wants to check out our article, go to groomer.com. Okay, go ahead, Mary.
Okay, and this is really how important it is for a business to prepare itself. A couple of years ago, a tornado had whipped through somewhere in Tennessee, and there was a communication company, whoever served that entire area, and their operations building was absolutely demolished. There was like bricks, cinder blocks, nothing left of it. They were prepared for that to happen so that most of their clients never even lost their phone service at all. And the ones that did, that was because, you know, wires were down. But they were able to seamlessly, because they were prepared for that to happen, everybody knew what their job was, and it was very seamless. No, like 90% of their clients did not even know that their building, that operations building had been destroyed, because they never lost their phone service.
Right.
I just want to throw a couple of figures. How about
uh-huh.
you? There is 25, hold on a second. Let me just find, I just want to get the right place that I have. Okay. It's called the Institute of Business and Home Safety. And they say that 25% of businesses will never reopen after a major disaster. So a disaster has the ability to put a business out of business.
And I'm going to just pop up back to the San Francisco incident I went through. You're absolutely 100% right. Hundreds of businesses in San Francisco didn't reopen. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Just in the city itself, and yeah.
And just taking it a step further too, everyone should have some sort of contingency fund. When you're setting your prices and deciding what your business expenses are, there should be a contingency fund so that you have money in the event of a disaster, which may or may not be covered by your insurance. Right? And if it's more than likely, if it's a natural disaster, it's probably not going to be covered by your insurance or very little of it. And the only way to truly find that out is to actually talk to your insurance agent and ask them. And one thing I also do want to mention about insurance, if you change the setup of your business, like for example, if you're a sole proprietor and you go to LLC, or you're an LLC and you decide to let that go and be a sole proprietor, if you don't tell your insurance company that, you're not covered. Doesn't matter who you're paying, you're not covered. You have to, the insurance company has to have the proper structure of your business in order for it to pay out on the claim.
You are so right, and let me tell you, I was an insurance adjuster for a very short period in my life when I wasn't in the grooming industry. And when the time comes, they look for any and everything to get out of paying you. If that's mm-hmm. what adjusters do, if they don't have... And that's 100% true. I don't like to, I'm not trying to characterize them as bad, but you have to do your due diligence about making
yes.
sure that you've read the fine print and you say, I actually found that you should say, they don't expect them to know how grooming works. You have to say, what if this happened? Describe the incident. This could happen to a pet. And then get their answer, because they're not going to tell you all the little things that could happen. They can't even think of them. They just think in general terms like fire or whatever, you know. But so you should really sit down with that broker or agent and say, what if this happens, and describe all the risks.
Mm-hmm.
That's what
yep.
you to, that's doing due diligence.
My new grooming van, when we bought it, I didn't register it to my business. I registered it to myself and my husband. Now, in order for my vehicle now to be covered under my business policy, I had to send the insurance company a lease back, basically stating that we are leasing our vehicle to the business. And
uh-huh.
they need that on file, because if I'm in an accident with it, they're not going to cover it.
Yes. And people don't believe what they insured. No, you know what they do. They just refund you what was prepaid at the moment they cancel you. And they
mm-hmm.
and otherwise, that's all they have to do, yes, because you
mm-hmm.
were not compliant in notifying, as you're saying. That's really good advice, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and I want to go back to the waivers a second. My clients love the fact that I have that waiver there. I don't think there's another single groomer in my area that does that. They love it, because it shows them that I care about not only their pet in my care, but also the other animals that are in their household. So that if they're, most of my clients are home, but you know, sometimes they want to run to the bank, or they got to pick up a kid from school on there. So they'll know that if something happens, I'm just not going to leave and then just bring their pet in the house and go. I'm going to take their pet with me.
Okay,
and
well,
if you have employees, you need to be clear on who does what.
You mentioned drills, I think, early on here. So
yes.
you literally would recommend drills, right? Yes.
Absolutely. You know, and it's nothing that you have to do once a week. Maybe, you know, if you have employees and once a month you have like an employee meeting or something like that, that would be a good time to do a quick practice drill.
And
again,
yeah.
be really clear
yeah.
over who does what. You know, it's Jill's job to grab the files. It's Joe's job to make sure that, you know, that he starts getting all the crates out. You know, have people have a specific job.
Right. And then I've had people ask us over the years, would say, well, right, it is people, then the pets. First we make sure everyone's okay, and so I'm not training my people to not take care of the people first before the dogs in case we get into any kind of trouble. Does that sound reasonable to you?
It's not unreasonable.
Yeah, I know. It's a fine line. Care providers like us, it is such a hard one to answer.
I actually have
an inventor, by the way, Mary, who was trying to invent a cage bank where you could press one bar and it would open up all the cages, doors in an emergency to evacuate them the fastest. How's that for an idea?
Yeah, actually, I think a better idea would be to make sure that it was easily to move the entire cage bank out the door.
Yeah, that's interesting, too. Yeah.
Something that moves easily, and then you could just take the entire...
Well, then you have a way to contain them outside. Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly. That's kind of...
Yeah, but how many cage banks will fit through a door?
That's right. You'd have to have big double doors and have to have wheels on the banks and there. But it's a fun idea. This is the way, you know, things are invented, is to think this way. So, yeah.
Hmm. And it's ideas, because you know what? Your shop might be able to accommodate that.
I'm sure there are some. Absolutely. I've seen them with the draw-up doors. I mean, even on some industrial centers that had an area that was caging, and they had a roll-up kind of door. So that could be in a place like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, another one, Mary, that I've been involved with occasionally, just in consulting, is people that got very sick from their basement. They never did radon testing before they put in, and they found out they had radon down in their basement. And that's something that can be easily tested, and it's just very serious. It happens, actually, you know, out on the West Coast, we don't have a lot of basements, but by East Coast people, it's common.
Yeah, that was a big to-do up here a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
About testing for radon. When we were buying a house, this is back in 1993, that was a huge thing. There were houses that we looked at and found out that because we did the radon testing on it, and it was just like, oh my God, it was like, how many of these people don't have like three eyeballs? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have another one to share where she actually did have to evacuate from a fire next door, the dogs, and she had a bag at her counter to grab. And she had like 30 leashes, water, and like 30 bowls. But she figured if the dogs were all loose, she'd at least have leashes and could, you know, link them together and all. So having some kind of kit. And that brings me to a question from Cindy in Pennsylvania. And she asked, this is by email, so I didn't reply to her. She'll listen to the show. For emergencies like this, what kind of first aid kit should they put together?
Okay, you know, I have lots of even on the blog, I'm almost positive there's a first aid kit there. You should have a first aid kit in your shop, and whatever kit that is, that's the one you should bring. In the December Groomer to Groomer, I have a current listing of what's in my first aid kit. That's December 2015. That has a nice list in there. A couple things I like to caution on first aid kits. If you have cats, you really want to be careful with the antibiotic cream. You don't want to use the triple. You just want the plain one-ingredient antibiotic cream. It's a very, very rare allergy, but if a cat is allergic to the three ingredients in the triple antibiotic, it's a fatal allergy. I always play it safe that because I groom cats, that I only have the one regular old, plain old, one-ingredient antibiotic cream. And the other thing is with hydrogen peroxide, again, that's going to be a problem for cats. It's not something you can use to induce vomiting in a cat because cats can't metabolize hydrogen peroxide. So those are the two things I always like to make mention of for first aid kits if you're grooming cats or you have cats.
Okay. I have a I'm going to just continue. We've got some good questions here. Alan and
might ask this question here.
Okay.
The problem with leashes and collars and trying to take dogs out of a facility like that, it's going to be scary for them. And when dogs are scared and you got like 3 or 4 of them or 5 or 6 of them, A, you could have fights between the dogs because they're stressed out. You could also have dogs that back out of those collars and run away. This is why the crates are just so much better, because you put one animal in the crate, close the door, and then just bring it outside. If you have, I know there's like daycare facilities where they're having 20, 30 pets. You can't walk 20 or 30 pets outside of a building because you're going to have dog fights and you're going to have a couple that are going to get away.
Right. I think the hardest situation in some ways is when it's a fire and you have to evacuate quickly. You have quite a few that trying to get going in and out the door that many times with the crate's going to be really challenging. You may not even truly have.
This is why they need to practice.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have one person hauling out 5 or 6 dogs.
Right.
You know? If you think in the average groomer, I mean, I'm mobile, so I it's been a long time since I even worked in a shop. I mean, at any given time for me, when I worked in a shop, there was probably about 5 dogs assigned to me. I did work for Petco, so there were other employees there. So in the event of something like that, the other employees could have come in and helped remove some of those dogs.
Right.
But it's something to be aware of. You know, if you're going to be taking 5, 6, 7 dogs out at one time, you need to be aware of those risks.
Yes. I think today, and for people that are looking to own a business in the future, having a sprinklered building can make a big difference maybe in your decision of where you rent, because that would certainly alleviate, especially if you're going to have a larger business where it would be overwhelming to handle because you maybe have 20, 30 pets because you're a large salon. You know, today, by talking with you today, it makes me think, I think a sprinklered building makes a big difference.
Because it might give you enough time to go in and out of that building a couple of times and get everybody out.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
And as employees, you may not be able to force an employee to go back into a building that there's fire because it puts them at risk. So as a business owner, this may fall totally on you.
Exactly. It would. Oh, boy. Let me ask Alan in Kentucky. He wanted to know, and it relates to fire, in temporarily caring for a pet in an emergency that is exhibiting signs of smoke inhalation, do you have any idea what to do with that pet?
Yeah, go to the vet. Again, having a waiver there, a vet release waiver, so that the vet will treat that pet, because without a waiver from the owners, a veterinarian will most likely refuse.
Wow. You know,
I have 3 waivers. There's 3 waivers on my client information form, the one I'll do the blog on. The first one is a permission to do CPR or not do CPR. I have a lot of elderly dogs in my schedule. The second one is a vet release, and the third one is an emergency release. And they should know wherever you're located, whether you're a shop or you're mobile, you should know where the nearest veterinarian office is.
Don't you think that even, I know in our business, we had we didn't use waivers in those days, you know, and I know, had they thought of it, we use release and hold harmless agreements and all for, you know, depending on conditions of the pet. But this is such a great idea about releasing for the veterinary care like this. But every business should have even posted for everyone there to call, because you never know, what if I go out to lunch and I'm manager, whatever, the emergency phone numbers. But one clinic that will serve for that emergency basis, if you know, because you can't get a hold of all the individual vets perhaps at once. And
exactly.
I'm surprised how many groomers don't really have that literally set up. So in other words, the vet understands that, yeah, oh yeah, call this place. But we've never gone down and talked to that vet about that situation, you know. So be a great conversation. Now,
and you know
you,
what?
Do you have any problems getting those three signed, by the way?
Never.
They really
I have
they
not
feel
ever,
better about your business.
Well, I think what it is that when, especially my newer clients, they're like, oh, my God, you're so professional. I've never had a groomer ask me this before or sign this before. And they're just like, you know, it makes them feel like, A, that I have their best interest for their pet. And in the event that something happens, I'm prepared to do what's necessary for the betterment of that pet. But, of course, like with the CPR and the emergency waiver, it is, you know, they're agreeing to relieve me of liability. That's a hold harmless.
Uh-huh. Great. I like that. Now, Tina in Michigan, this is the last question I had emailed to me, goes, what do you do if you've got several pets, there's been an emergency, there are no telephones, and even cell phones are out, everything. And that certainly happens here in the Northwest occasionally, where we lose every kind from big winds. And what are you going to do to get a hold of the customers?
This is how I handle it. On my phone, I have a client database on my personal phone so that once I get my cell service back, I can contact every one of my clients for when cell service is returned. Put a note on the door. If you're leaving, this is an emergency. I'm not here. I took your pet with me. This is how you contact me and leave your cell number. Because if the owners, maybe the first thing that they do once they can is go over to the shop to see if their pet is there. If you have a note on the door saying, if you know where you're going, and this is also part of where the emergency management office comes in, knowing where the pet emergency shelters are, so that, and it can change. I mean, here in Danbury, that emergency shelter has changed in the last 3 years three times. Because, you know, because they need a large enough facility that they can, it's usually a school or a church, usually a school or a municipal building that is designated as the pet shelter so that during an emergency, that's where you're going. So if you know where it is, you could put that on the note. I'm going to the shelter located on 3rd Street, whatever. So the owner knows where their pet is or your cell phone so they know how to get a hold of you. And then if you have your client information on your phone, I have an iPhone, and I think the name of the, I think it's called BASE, B-A-S-E, and it's a free app. And it's all I list is client name, all contact information. So I have cell numbers, emails, and home lines. And if I have to get a hold of somebody, I have their information right on my phone. I don't need to have my files with me.
That's a wonderful idea, and there's so many different disasters where that would apply. So everyone needs an off-premises way to access your customer files for the contact purpose. That's
right.
A great idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm still very much a paper and pen type of girl, so my files are in a big old notebook, big old binder, and that's my primary use. But you know, if something happens to that binder that has everything right there, I need to have a backup. So the backup for me is a client database on my phone.
Mm-hmm. You know, even for our business to run here, I make backups, and I put them, and people say, well, I make backups too, but I go, but if that, where are they? In the house where the computer is, or they're at work. And I go, but what if work burns down? So your backups have burned down. So at least once a week, I take a few minutes and make backups, but I put it in a different building on my property. So
mm-hmm.
where the main computers are. One thing I can share, I've had a few more extra things to share, but what we learned in the 1989 quake was that usually the phones tend to go out by area codes, and so it takes a while sometimes to get the phones back up. So what the disaster planners came in after the quake, because everyone wanted a disaster planner, of course, because the disaster had happened. So everyone started doing what you're talking about now, really getting ready. And they found out that you should have a phone that either people can call or it could be the manager of the business outside the next area code over, because those lines were up. And so everyone at the next disaster would have been able to call. 415 was downtown San Francisco, but I happen to live in 717 or something. What was it those days? I can't remember. It was like 50 miles away. I commuted daily. And so they put in my home an answering machine so all the employees could find out what was happening at the business by calling outside to a separate area code. Does that make sense, the way I explained it?
Yes, actually, a really good idea.
Yeah, that's how it worked. And at work they said, can we put it in your house, this? And I said, sure, as long as I'm working here, you can have your machine. Or you can order a voicemail service that's hosted outside of that area code. And so that's what these big high-profile people are doing.
Well, you know what? That's why, like, the microchip companies, for emergency contact, they want not only your contact information, but they want to contact outside of your area. Like, I have a daughter up in New Hampshire, so which is three states away. So she's listed on my emergency contact, because if my pet gets away from me because of the disaster and they can't reach me because my cell and my phone numbers are down, they can call my daughter.
Right. So even I know the one thing we did do, even I'm going back, is just saying we were in the 60s before all this knowledge, but we did ask for a separate emergency phone number from every customer too, like you're saying, and it often was a relative living in the area. Interesting. So do you collect any kind of information like that?
No, I don't collect outside information. Actually, only because I'm only dealing with one family at a time.
That's right.
I don't have.
Or as mobile. That's right. As
yeah,
mobile,
because
that's
the
benefit.
Yeah, so that I'm going to be limited. So I make it clear, during an emergency, I am not going to your house to get your pet. If I'm at your house, this is what happens. You know?
So what do you do? Let's cover all our mobile bases here. As a mobile, and how emergencies affect, which could be, let's say your engine started on fire or something like that. What do you keep inside your van to help for an emergency if your van becomes disabled and unsafe?
Well, I have, of course, a fire extinguisher and a carbon monoxide detector and a first aid kit in there. And being as the most animals I ever have in my van at one time is two. I might bring two if it's brother and sister or siblings. I might bring both in at the same time. But I use slip leads. I take it back. It's been a long time since I've used client collars. And, you know, after you chase a dog around the neighborhood because they backed out of the collar, you stop doing that. So all of my, they're taken, the animals come in on a slip lead. So if I have to leave, they're leaving on a slip lead. Oh, and I never have more animals that I have control of at one time. So you won't find like four animals in my van because I don't have control of four animals. So if there's a household that has more than two dogs, that's going to be at least two trips back and forth into the house for them because I don't have control of more than two.
All right. So we've talked about many, many things here. Boy, we've just come up with all kinds of things, but it just shows you there are really a lot of potential things that may happen. How does one organize a plan for their business?
One of the best resources I have found is FEMA's website. It's FEMA, FEMA.gov. There is a load of information up there on how to do it yourself. You could also go to the emergency management office and have someone help you do it. You could hire somebody to come out and help you set up a plan yourself. And depending on whether or not you're one person or 30 people, you know, how much you want, how much you need. I mean, if you have like 30 employees, then you really need a comprehensive plan. And probably I would suggest hiring somebody to do that for you. But if you're a small shop or a mobile, you're more than likely can make up your own just by going out and seeking out some knowledge.
Great. And you know what just came to mind, people, that just, you know, as Mary gets started here, you've mentioned me before that rollovers were a consideration on trucks on, like, with tankers, but it brought to mind in consulting, I had a groomer tell me a story where she had about 15 dogs at her grooming business, and there was a train situation, and they had to, everyone that was within a half mile of the train tracks had to evacuate the building. So there's just nothing. She had to evacuate. She said she had like 10 dogs. She had two employees, and they put all the dogs in their cars and had to evacuate 15 dogs. It was something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And but by planning to do that, you know, by taking the time to do drills, that becomes a little easier to do than hitting the panic button first and then, oh, my God, what do I do? Then you think, oh, but how am I going to contact the owners? There's so many things that go into any kind of an emergency if you know what you're doing ahead of time. You don't have to think about this. You don't have to go into panic mode. I mean, like I said, I've got all my clients on my phone.
Yes.
You know, it's very simple that if I leave – let's just say I was a shop and all my clients are on the phone. If I had, say, I had four or five clients with me, I could get them in my car and go and then contact those people, whether it's by text or by email or by phone or calling them. I have a way of getting a hold of them to let them know where I'm at with their pets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Excellent idea. So I think it's just obvious that everyone needs to follow your advice and create a plan that's appropriate for their type of business.
And everyone's going to be different, you know, and everyone's needs are going to be different.
Absolutely. Just looking at, you know, mobile, boy, that is a simpler one compared to a shop, especially as we get into a larger salon and all, but it is something that should be a part of operating whatever you're operating. And I'm glad you're bringing this up to the people to hear this, and hopefully they're going to follow up on that. So we'll look for some follow-up blog on some waivers from you.
Yes.
Right?
And for it's going right into my to-do list. It may be a couple of days before I get to it, but I assure you it is on my to-do list, so it'll get done.
Okay, we won't be sitting here tapping our foot waiting. Yeah, we appreciate you just taking the time to do that. And they should check out your whole blog anyway. Your blog it's so unique compared to all the other ones because you really address these kind of issues and all the first aid type care. And why don't you just discuss for a minute and encourage them? Are you going to be doing any CPR training?
Oh, we got a ton of them coming up.
Well, let's go on and talk. That's part of this.
Okay, what upcoming classes? All right, May, we have two classes in May, one with the New England Pet Groomers Professionals at Foxwoods, by the way. So if you're in Connecticut or Massachusetts or Rhode Island, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And then we're doing a first aid class in Mardi Paws. That's also in May. And then in July, we have three classes set up for upstate. One in, we're calling it the Pet Tech Tour. On July 16th, we'll be in Buffalo. On the 17th, we'll be in Ithaca. And on the 18th, we'll be in the Albany area. And we've got three classes set up there. There will be definitely another class set up in this region here, so like the Danbury area, probably in August. And that's as far as we got planned. Oh, wait, in Vegas. We're also doing a first aid class at Super Zoo.
Great. That's I took one. It's been about 25 years ago, and it really gives you such a good feeling to know what to do.
And just so that you know, we just did a class in Massachusetts a couple of weeks ago, and the owner of the store, who paid for all her employees to take this class – contacted me yesterday that they saved the life of a pet that had went into a heart attack, and they did CPR and revived the dog.
Yes, that's just wonderful. You know, that's something else that, again, people may say, oh, you know, not that, you know, you'd be surprised. We find that in the news. Because, again, we go through and post the articles we find searching national news. And every month, almost, I find someone has saved a pet somewhere by knowing CPR in a salon or a kennel or something like that. We hear about that. So I hope they'll follow up and everyone invest a day in CPR training for animals.
Right. And you know what? And if I could always, if it's a place where it's just something too far for Beth and I to travel to teach, you know, I could find, help people find an instructor that might be closer to them.
Okay. Awesome. Well, what's the best way to get a hold of you? Let's tell people all the ways they can contact you.
Okay, there's many ways. You can friend me on Facebook. More than likely, I'm going to hit the accept button because I have not reached the limit yet, so I'm good there. My email, mary@positivelypretty.com, is also a good way. My website is maryoquendo.com. You can always shoot me. There's a bunch of contact forms in that website. You can always shoot me a message through there.
And your blog, you have Pet First Aid Care, that's it, GroomWise, which is, it's actually GroomWise, one word, .com. And you can find, Mary's been posting for years in that blog, so there's just a wealth of information there. And then tell us just a little bit, though, on this new blog you have for your little pet.
It's called Spirit Dog Blog. The website is spiritdogblog.com. The Facebook is Spirit Dog Blog. That's three words, though. And it's sort of the world through his eyes. And I probably will have the first blog up on that probably around May on that. I need to finish up the everything with the book, get the final details and stuff like that. So that'll be the next thing going. That I plan on that to be a weekly blog, and I plan to have fun with that one. So that's not going to be like heavy and informational. It's just going to be something fun.
Excellent. I know you're very sensitive to the energies, and also I'm sure there's a lot of communicating going on, especially again when it's a blind pet. So I bet that's really special to read. Okay.
Well, Spirit is our third blind dog, but he's the first blind dog that was born blind. He was born with glaucoma. So my other two dogs went blind. Both of them were diabetic, but one really was more from old age. But Spirit was, he was always blind.
Interesting. So I will check that out. And I think, Mary, you know, I was thinking back, it's been 5 years since we published your first aid kit in eGroomer Journal. And perhaps I'll talk with you about maybe in the next issue we can update it with the
yeah, and, that's probably, that 5 years is a long time. Yeah, I think that's due for an update.
You were like in the first or second issue, so I'll get a hold of you, and perhaps we can update that and get that out to people too. Okay.
Okay. Okay. And on the waivers too that I have, when I post them up on the blog, feel free to put them in the e-groomer.
That would be awesome. Yeah, we're going to get that out April 30th, the next issue. So that gives us some time. I think that if you're willing to do that, thank you very much. That's wonderful.
Okay. All right, so I'll get all of that out to you, and let me just write this in my to-do list, because if I don't, it'll go in one ear out the other. Update.
Yeah.
First aid kits for e-groomer.
Yep.
There you go.
The latest, yeah. Okay. Well, Mary, our hour we've gone past an hour already. I just want to thank you for being here, and you do tremendous things and make it available to groomers on something very unique. And what does it do? It helps save those wonderful pets we take care of and makes it a safer environment. So I just thank you for all that you're doing.
Oh, no, thank you. Thank you for having me. I really and truly appreciate it. It means a lot to me.
Okay. Thank you, everyone. And if you ever need to get a hold of Mary, remember, she is even at our Groomer Talk message board at petgroomer.com. Mary is a member there. And
yeah, it's Working Chihuahua. You can also send me a message there.
Uh-huh. Yep. She's been with us for a long time there, too. So, again, thank you, Mary, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you so much. All right, you too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.